Now, if I was doing this panel Sunday, I'd probably need it. Yep. Perfect time for a nap, eh?
I don't know if you guys were in FERPOC or A&E, I think.
I was at A&E.
Yeah, okay, I saw you at A&E then, I think.
Yep.
Because you had a scanner or something, and you had an overhead projector? Was that you?
No, that was someone else.
Oh, okay, that was someone else, okay. But yeah, something at A&E, yeah. Yep. Might have seen it, I can't remember. But yeah, there was someone who had a scanner, that was like on Saturday night or Friday night or something, and 8 o'clock at night, it might have been someone else.
Yeah, it definitely was someone else.
Yeah.
They don't have anything digital for presentation or anything.
Hmm. FERPOC? Were you at FERPOC?
No, I was not FERPOC. How are you guys doing? Join the con?
Yep.
Yeah.
Are good.
All right. More people trickling in, so. I'm just gonna awkwardly sit here.
That sounds about right.
Yeah. I figure if I call it out, it's better than just, you know, letting it sit there and then it's kind of. See, there's more people coming. Come in, they can be late. So hi, welcome to Furry Library Presents. My name's Summercat. I run the Furry Library, which is used to be the only real archival project in the furry fandom, but now that's no longer the case. But we were I say we, it's me. You can also title it Summercat Shows Off His Collection, but really, I try to make certain that this stuff, you know, a lot of the stuff I have, people don't get to see it because, you know, it's out of print, it's older, they've joined the fandom,
hello,
you know,
Joe.
20 years after it was printed. Or in this case, they're Joe, and they were here before. And one of the things I did, I'm originally from California, and I've been buying some of these comics, you know, because I've been wanting them for forever. And when I came out to the East Coast, I was invited to a party, and I brought some to show, and some younger furs were like, I don't know any of these things. What is furlough? And I'm like, I must teach them. And it's really grown from there. I've really gotten a good focus on it. I only brought two boxes of items. You can pretty much see everything on this table, everything on those tables. I have a grand total of, with the purchases I've made that I got picked up this con, I think I have somewhere between 5,000 and 6,000 different furry publications. Mm-hmm. That does include duplicate copies. But a lot of this stuff is just stuff that you won't necessarily be able to see. You'll hear about it, then you go, okay, where can I read that? You can't. It's gone. And this is the stuff that, you know, the furry fandom was not entirely based off of, but this is the stuff that came before. I want to make sure, you know, people have a chance to see it. And that's why I bring it out to cons and show off my stuff. Wow. I'm going to blame the pandemic for me, you know, completely blanking there. What I'm going to do is I'm going to talk about a couple of specific titles and publications, and then just say, come take a look. A lot of these comics and zines are bagged. If your hands are clean, Mr. Pizza Dude, calling you out.
I'll be watching them.
I'm watching you. If your hands are clean, go ahead and pull them out of the plastic and give them a read. I am not interested in mint collecting for these things. My opinion is food is meant to be eaten. Toys are meant to be played with. Comics are meant to be read. And if you're not reading them, then you're not really appreciating them. Which makes all the collectors who go, oh my god, this is all mint, we have to keep it safe, I give them headaches. And then Joe, if I say anything objectionable, object. That's Joe Strike. He wrote Furry Nation, which is about the only published furry history of the furry fandom.
And in a couple of weeks, Furry Planet, the second published history of furry fandom.
I was hoping it would be out by now, but I saw it got delayed, so...
Yeah, the card says February, but that didn't happen. Yeah.
Well, I know I'll be buying when it comes out.
Yeah, me too.
But generally, I don't focus on the furry fandom's history entirely. I focus on the publications, which is pretty well tied together anyway. And... following in the footsteps of Fred Patton, one of the things I actually say, I know, Joe. Mm-hmm.
Halo over his head. Yeah.
What it is that furry... I differentiate between general anthropomorphic animal comics and such and furry fandom. For the purposes of the furry library, because I fund it out of my own paycheck and I have to decide what I'm spending money on, I define furry as things made by, for... or influenced by the furry fandom. So in this case, things like Atomic Mouse, if you ever heard of it.
Oh.
1950s, 60s comic involving a super strong mouse. I would not necessarily call this furry. However, where is it? Grumble. Did I not pull it? Wow, I didn't pull it. There's from Shanda Fantasy Arts, they came up with their own version of Atomic Mouse. Same basic character, same basic stories, but that I would consider furry. And this is where, you know, a lot of people can... This is where I go... I'm just talking about the media stuff, and I'm talking primarily just for... So I'm not buying Animaniacs comics.
Okay.
So I am not saying this is... I'm not saying this is valid for any other purpose than the purpose I'm using it for. So that said, Lion King's not furry. You may now start to sound me. But generally, what I do is, or what I say is that there's the funny animal fandom and funny animal comics. And there's no real good way to differentiate between funny animal and furry. There's no good dividing line. What Fred Patton did is use the foundation of a amateur press association zine called Rawrazzle as a, okay, at this point in time, there is a furry fandom. Rawrazzle was not the start of the furry fandom, but you can say, okay, here's where we say there is a definite furry fandom at this point. One of the other things that came up around the same time is Albedo by Steve Galacci, which also ties into how a lot of the first furry parties and gatherings started. But that's for a different panel. He actually came up with a bunch of different prototypes, and I actually found out, even though... what the heck is with me today? Even though Rawrazzle is considered to be one of the first furry publications, the first version of Albedo prototype came out in 1983, and even before that was Omaha the Cat Dancer. You may be familiar with it, you may not be. Omaha the Cat Dancer came out late 70s, 79, 78. He's not paying attention to me. I'm not worth it. And you can't really call it a funny animal comic because there's no humor there. It's not a comedy. There is some humor in there. But it's a serious story. It's also an adult story. The main character is an exotic dancer, and it approaches things very seriously. It also was a part of the reason why we have the Comic Book Legal Defense Fund. Because a court in Canada decided, oh, no, this is porn, and took it and a bunch of other comics. And from the resulting lawsuits and where, you know, the judge was struck down, we got the Modern Comic Day Legal Defense Fund.
Would they have been subject to the same kind of laws that, like, Marvel and other things kind of came into? Because I know Marvel for a long time couldn't call, like, vampires vampires and certain things like that.
I don't think that was a legal thing. I think that was a comic code thing.
Yeah.
A lot of furry stuff is very small press, mm-hmm. very indie press, very underground comics, and they didn't really have to pay attention to the comics code that much, as mm-hmm. far as I'm aware. I am not an authority on comics in general. I'm just furry fandom.
Okay.
So, but to me, that sounds like a comics code thing. Whereas, you can't have anything that looks like, you know, someone over the age of 4 might enjoy it.
It made it really hard to have, like, horror comics for a while.
Yeah. Sorry, last week I've had insomnia, so I'm like,
We appreciate you showing up.
Yes, I'm doing what I can, I swear. Albedo actually became a anthology comic. In that case, it's a comic series that has a bunch of smaller series inside it. I don't know how else to say that. Basically, instead of having just one issue that's, you know, just one story from page one to the final page, it has, in this case, this one. Opening it up. Of course, there's no index. Lovely. This one has two different stories in it. One from Irma Felna EDF, which is Steve Galacci's sci-fi universe. And the other is actually, this one, it would have been the second appearance of Usagi Yojimbo. If you've heard of that one, Usagi Yojimbo actually had its first publication in Albedo, issue number 2. And due to how it was published, that issue cannot be reprinted, making it worth about $10,000. And if I ever had it, I actually don't know if I actually would buy that as opposed to spending $10,000 worth of other comics.
Mm-hmm. Stan Sakai was guest of honor here in 2004, and Steve Galacci joined us at our Zootopia panel in 2019.
Stan Sakai was here more. I heard him more recently than that.
Well, in 2004, maybe he was more recently, but 2004, the theme was Summer Games, and he did the cover and everything with Usagi Yojimbo. Yeah. So maybe he was there recently too, but I think it was 2004.
Albedo was put out by Thoughts and Images, which is Steve Galacci's thing. It was later Steve and everything pretty much moved over to Critters, which was another anthology comic that ran for 50 issues, put out by Fantagraphics. Fantagraphics Usagi also moved to a full-on its own title under Fantagraphics and ran off for a while there. Critters ran for 50 issues, was replaced. I have issue 1 here and then also issue 50. And then there was this fan named Tara Wayne who worked on something called Critics, which is this little zine he did that was in Complete Analysis. What am I saying wrong? This is actually an analysis and breakdown of the Critters comic line, including what he thought went wrong. The funny thing about Tara Wayne is that this isn't his first real encounter with doing stuff in larger furry fandom. Omaha the Cat Dancer was a response to a question by Tara Wayne of how come there isn't more sex in Funny Animal. So if anyone ever says, oh, furry fandom doesn't have, didn't always have porn on it, they're wrong. Am I right?
Absolutely.
Exactly, see? And if I'm not an authority, then he is. And he, if he is an authority, no one's an authority.
Thank you.
Some other things I wanted to... Oh, yeah. The big anthology comic after Critters, Furlough, actually started off before that from Antarctic Press and later Radio Comics, and ran for 194 issues, plus two color specials, two anthology comics, and one best of. And I have them all, which is probably one of the very few full collections of the damn thing, including the publisher right now. And it actually was the longest running anthology comic in North America, period. I don't know if that's true anymore, but it was, you know, as of 5 years ago when I last looked it up. It originally started off as... You saw nothing. It originally started off as primarily military and sci-fi stuff. That's why it's called Furlough. But later became more general for all sorts of various topics. Some other notable ones I wanted to bring up. Okay, there's Omaha. Hepcats is an adult comic. It was republished several times. I don't think he actually ever officially finished the story. But it's a coming-of-age in college story. How many times have you seen one of those? This is one of the earliest. And it was an influence on Associated Student Bodies. Which, I'm seeing a lot of people nod their heads, was very influential in the early furry fandom, came around the turn of the millennium, and it's a gay coming of age during college, including a gay awakening and coming to terms with family. And it is the number two thing I recommend for people to read to understand the furry fandom. The story itself hasn't really aged well, in my opinion. But it's still important to really understand, especially when the number one thing I recommend, Circles, exists specifically because Associate Student Bodies ended. You have a question?
What did you say that one is called again?
This one's Associated Student Bodies.
Okay.
I have a compilation of it over here. So if you want to take a look-see at it, let me see your ID. It is an adult comic. Circles, however, is not the only naughty times are in Fade to Black scenarios. But it is also the most influential comic in my personal life, to the point where I looked at the relationship between two of the adult characters who are effectively married and said, okay, that's what I want my marriage to be like. And it is. I wasn't expecting that, but okay. One of the other things that I try to show and try to make certain people are aware of, it's like completely random things, like forget his name. He did this comic series, Walter Kitty in the Hollow Earth. He had an entire webcomic. Due to digital data rot, his webcomic is gone. There is very little out there of his work that, you know, is easy to find. I've found some more recently, but that's because I actually finally got a copy of American Journal of Anthropomorphics issue 4, where he was in it. But pretty much, aside from a couple things, that was it. He had effectively disappeared. The only proof he existed was this. Same thing for this one, called The Motorbike Puppies. I found a copy of this in the West Coast for issue 2. I found a copy of issue 2 on the East Coast. It's very small press, I can't find any very, very much information on it. I just happen to know that issue 2 was given out to a bunch of comic shops as a free promotional thing because the person I'm talking to owned and ran the comic shop at that time and just happened to remember. So this might be hard to find, and then you don't know much about it. I have a couple of catalogs here. These are mail order catalogs. Where you would... This would pretty much be the only way to buy furry comics and furry zines. Or art prints, is to actually do a mail order. This one's from Mailbox Books, which became Rabbit Valley, which was the largest non-personal imprint furry company until it was bought out by Fetish Publications, I think last year or so. Which is really weird, because I happen to be good friends with those people way before they got started Fenris Publications. I don't know. One of the last things I wanted to show. Let's see here. You guys are familiar with Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles?
What?
Yeah. A lot of knockoffs on that. That started the mutant animal craze that a lot of people went off to. And it's, mutant animal is a kind of a subsection of anthropomorphic that I go by. I don't necessarily know if it's furry or not, because it's in that right time zone where it could be, it could not be. But these are always some of the knockoffs that make me smile. Adolescent radioactive black belt hamsters. Naive interdimensional commando koalas.
That's the first I ever heard of that one.
And my personal favorite, preteen dirty jean kung fu kangaroos.
Okay.
Sometimes the parody is a little obvious. But also sometimes the... there we go. Sometimes the originality of titles isn't always all that great. For example, Wild Lifers, Wild's End, Wild Side, Wild Life, Wild Frontier, Wild Animals, The Wild, Wild.
I see a pattern.
There is a pattern there, and that's why the W box is larger than my Xbox. But not the con. I didn't realize it. Anyway.
I got what you meant.
You know what I meant. Let's see here. There's that. That. Oh, yeah, if you're interested in making fursuits or the history of fursuit making. Well, if you're interested in the history of making fursuits, this book, Critter Costuming by Ed Riggs, might be up your alley. If you're looking at how to make fursuits, this book is absolutely useless. The reason I say that is because this was published in, what, 2004? Yep. This was published in 2004 and had every single technique and concept of making fursuits from back then, and none of those concepts are used today. But this is how fursuits were made back then. So, completely out of date, but fascinating to read. Let's see here. I have a copy of Dog Days of Summer, which I know a lot of people were obsessed with, from Blotch, who no longer exists because the two split up. Black Tegan and...
Tuscarum.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They used to be a duo called Blotch. And this was... everyone was obsessed with this around, 2006?
2007, I think.
When was it published?
I think
2007.
Yeah.
2007, 2008.
I remember reading it when I wasn't supposed to.
I can't say a damn thing because I used to browse VCL. Yeah, for the record, I joined the fandom in 1999. I've been slowly trying to collect this stuff since. One of the other things I have, zines-wise, is the American Journal of Anthropomorphics, which is basically art, comics, and primarily advertising for artists who are taking commissions. So you see some interesting things there. One of the things that came up recently is there is a army unit that has a certain very adult-looking horse as their icon. Where is it? And people were like, whoa, that came up from a porn hack. Well, this isn't porn, technically. It's not necessarily something I'd be wanting to read at school, but... where was it? There we go. Behold!
Yep.
Actual unit mascot.
Wow.
Someone knows what they're doing.
They actually, apparently as the story developed, they actually had contacted the artist and got permission to use it.
Wow.
So it's not just art theft.
Jay Shell. The artist, Jay Shell.
Yes, that sounds right.
Mm-hmm.
Beyond that, I have a bunch of small zines, other things. I don't want to take up too much time because I really want you guys to be able to look through this. Oh, I said too much. Oh, good, okay. I don't want to take too much time because I want you guys to be able to open these up and give them a read. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe you'll find something you like and want, you know, compete with me. Maybe this wasn't such a good idea to actually add more people want to buy this stuff. But I know there are companies out there that hold the rights to this stuff. There's a zine called Yarf that ran for, I forgot how many issues offhand. I really should review my facts on this stuff before I do panels. But Yarlithium Press, which is actually in the dealer's room here, they are selling reprints of Yarf. They also do a zine called North American Fur, which is still ongoing. And then I know Tales of Taipan actually has been selling, that was a shared universe that finished recently on, I think, issue 52. And they still sell old copies. So a lot of the people who have the rights to this stuff, you know, if there's a law of interest, they'll be interested in, you know, maybe reselling the stuff, and I'd love to see that. So yes, do compete with me for this stuff. Beyond that, normally I have a little more structure of things to talk about, but I'll be honest, I kind of forgot the con was happening until the last minute. So I think that's about it. Do you guys have any questions? Yes.
Not a question, but there were these furry amateur press associations, like Huzzah. Different artists would, you know, be part of it, contribute their stuff, and talk to each other in it. And then extra copies would be sent at would be sold at cons like Anthrocon. So you had that, and also I wound up getting a catalog from Mailbox Books. And inside there was a little flyer for something called Albany Anthrocon 1997. And I went to it. Some guy in a lab coat was there. I don't know if you've ever seen him. But and I've been to every edition of that con since then. So that's how I get into it. And then this little thing called the Internet and Squeaky Clean Furry Archive, later known as YURF. I know. So, but it was just, that was all part of it as well. But these, like I say, a major part of the history, Amateur Press Association, and so on.
I actually have some copies of those amateur press editions. I don't have a full run of Huzzah, but I have a bunch of that. I actually have a large collection of Rob Razzle. Thank you, Joe.
You are welcome.
Guess where I got it from?
I knew someone could make much better use of it than I.
Yep.
Currently, they're still all boxed up, but eventually. I know a lot of people come ask me, hey, would you ever scan and upload these things? Like, I eventually intend to get everything I have scanned and digitally backed up. I cannot distribute that to anyone without having specific, explicit permission from everyone who holds the rights to the content. I mean, sure, I could be all yar, but then you guys would have to understand that a lot of the people who... put out these things. I know them personally. They know me personally. They're kind of friends. I'm not going to do that to them. So there's no yar for me unless I become a coyote. But I will if there's a legitimate academic reason to have a copy of this stuff. I will, you know, take my phone, you know, do some quick photos. There was a request from a doctoral candidate for the contents of the anthropomorphic bibliography, which was put out by Yarf, because he wanted to see, you know, a listing of what was known at the time. And, yeah, I'll do that. So if there's like an academic reason, or you know, you're researching something, I'll provide information there. But if you just want to, you know, I want to read the comic, I'm like, nope, I can't do that. I want to, but I can't. Any other questions? Yep.
You mentioned data rot. I'm sure that many of us, especially if we came into the fandom in the late 90s, early aughts, found our way here via web comics that were hosted like Keenspot, Keenspace, etc. Are there efforts in place to either recover some of that, some of those comics, and or maybe get in touch with the original authors and see if they have that backed up? So
I don't know offhand. I know the Internet Archive's up doing stuff, but Internet Archive can't get everything. My personal focus is on actual physical media.
Certainly.
That does include CDs and stuff, but my personal focus has been on physical media. The other people I've been talking to who are also involved in archiving and gathering this stuff, I think they're also primarily focused on physical media. So I don't know of any organized attempt to do so.
Okay.
I'd love to see it, but...
There is something called Fang, Feather, and Fin, which I contributed a couple issues of Yarf and Huzzah to. And one of the guys involved is doing a panel at 4 o'clock on Foxes. And also, the other one is someone named Gail Frostbane, if you've ever heard of her. You know, the one that had about 5,000 people in her first week panel. Yeah. And so they have Fang, Feather, and Fin. That is a bit of a... They're going to try to do a collection of archives.
Okay. I'll have to give them a poke about that. Any other questions before I unleash the horde? Okay. Thank you guys for coming. If, like I said, please.
Yeah.
These are here to be read.
Who just got in? When did you get in? Like, did you get in, like, just 5 minutes ago, or?
Oh, never mind. That's a question.
Who just got into to Pittsburgh? Okay, cool. You're all rested then. No snoozing.
Rested, that's a stretch.
That's a stretch. I might just take a nap doing this. We've got about 2 minutes left, so we're just going to chill for a little bit. When did I get that?
So good.
I was like a year ago. And I just like, I just did more.
You're welcome to
try a mustard. My favorite. Is it mustard?